Okay, this is the special hour. The interactive portion of the program will take your phone calls with PMH Atwater. We're talking about her latest work, Dying to Know You. We'll get a little more into that work, too, when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, PMH Atwater with us. PMH, you wanted to read a passage, a short passage from your work? And then we'll go to calls. Go ahead.
Yeah. The greatest fear we have in living out our life on earth is not what might be expected. It's not what might happen to us, but what might be expected from us if we recognized who we are. It's like being on the other side. You begin to recognize that you are not name and number. You are not body. That you are a soul. That that you are a soul that pulses.
And speak up a little bit, PMH. I can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. You are a soul that pulses and has energy. And has always lived, is living now, and will always live. It's like eternity is your home.
Well, it is your home. There's no doubt about that. Now, here's the big question. If somebody doesn't experience an after-death episode, if their experience is actually dying and they don't come back, Here's the two possibilities, and I tell this to a lot of people because they ask me this question all the time. Does it exist? I said, if it exists and you die, you'll know about it. If it doesn't exist and you die, it doesn't matter. Simple as that. What do you think of that?
Well, the only way I could answer that is to say, for myself, I absolutely know. I don't have a question.
You have no doubts. That's true.
Right. And very often, those that die, my loved ones, people that I know, will come and visit me. I mean physically visit me. So I have no question what happens because I know they're going on. And near-death experiences almost to a person. Validate that and say that over and over and over again, that we don't really die. Our body dies. Our identity as name dies. But we, who we really are, our soul, our higher self, does not die. That it goes on and on and on. It's always been, it exists now, and it always will be. It's like we're co-creators with the Creator. We're an extension of a force and a power that's greater than us, that is the universe itself.
Let's take some calls.
You know, if you look at the word Holy Spirit, that phrase is bented about a lot, Holy Spirit. It literally means the breath of God breathing. If you talk to children and adults, they talk about breath. They talk about breathing on the other side. They talk about expansion and contraction being the only movement that creation makes. That children say the world on the other side is breathing, but not as your nose does. So that idea of expansion and contraction is very alive, and you feel that. It's like every essence is alive. Every essence is breathing. As once you get on the other side, or once you leave your body, you have 360-degree vision. You're larger out of the body than you are in the body. So it's like, well, why are we here It's like we're here somehow to make a difference, to make the world a better place, or to learn, or to grow, or to somehow help in that sense of creation and ongoing life and love and existence here. It's like here is where we get our muscles. The other side is where we get the curriculum. That's where we know the curriculum. We come here in a body, name and address, place, you know, fingers and toes. Here we act out, we learn, we grow. We get our muscles here. We don't get it over there. We get the muscles here to be able to fulfill. It's like there's a greater plan, a greater essence, a greater movement. And here we act that out, or we play that out, or we learn that. And to me, that's the excitement. The excitement is being here, acting out, or following through, or experimenting, or experiencing what is here and what I'm able to do. It just, to me, being in a body is a great privilege. Having name and an address is a great privilege. It's a privilege for me to be here participating in a world that is so exciting that I find it hard to even find words to describe how exciting it is to be here, even when things are horrible, even when things are terrible, even when I'm crying and in despair. It's still wonderful to be here. And I can say that with full voice, full meaning, and full commitment.
Okay, now we go to the calls for you, and we'll go to Ed in Los Angeles to get things started. Ed, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, George. I just wanted to say your show is great, and I've been enjoying traversing the last 10 years with you.
Great, thank you.
And I want to ask your guest, PMH, about an OBE I've had and how that compares with her findings in the NDE field. And I'm going to make it quick and pack it into like 60 or 90 seconds if I can. And this was about 8 years ago. I was at a fireworks show in Northeast in upstate New York, thousands of people. And I was riding my bike home, and I got home and I just laid down for a second because I was tired from riding. And I started feeling like I was tumbling or falling, which, you know, you feel like that sometimes when you're falling asleep. And it tends to shock you back up awake. But I tried to go with it. And what started happening to me was I tumbled, and then all of a sudden I was looking at the Earth at a large scale, like I was looking at it from outer space, and I was going down really small to like a molecular level. And it started vibrating so fast. And I found myself in a place where there was a huge circle, a golden circle, which looks like the ring of Saturn, and it was just, as I got closer, it was golden orbs, and they were conscious, and they started coming over to me and talking to me and saying, oh, you're here too, you're visiting us. And I said, I guess so, and they showed me that there's no time, there's no body in the place where they live and where they were existing, which looked like outer space to me. I felt like it was outer space. And I asked them, can I see God? And they said, sure, why not, if you'd like to. And when I got there, I was looking at a giant stone structure, you know, like a ancient monument. But I couldn't see the top of it. I couldn't see, like, a face or anything, just these legs and a giant body going up. And I asked, I said, can I ask a question? They said, sure, go ahead. I said, why are we here? And there was a huge gong clash and just a huge noise that shook everything. And I woke up in my bed. And I remember that. I think I'll remember it forever. I just wanted to hear what you guys have to say about that.
What kind of an experience, PMH, do you think he had?
Well, often they're called awakenings, where we suddenly maybe an out-of-body experience, maybe a dream, maybe just a vision, or somehow we're phased with this greater reality, this greater truth. In other words, we've had an awakening of some kind that just really jiggles us, stimulates us, and indeed wakes us up. You know, William James, the great religionist that taught us so much about the spiritual, called these awakenings, where you suddenly realize that you're more than your body, and that the world is more than what it appears to be. So I would call that an awakening.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's pretty good advice. Sharon's in Tulsa, Oklahoma now. Sharon, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I was wondering, my son, in September the 17th, he took his own life, and he's had some mental problems, I mean, with voices and schizophrenia and stuff like that. And it was real unexpected. I mean, I expected him to die. He did drugs and anything he could to try to kill the pain. And what happens to them when they experience death? I mean, after they've taken their life.
Those that I've had experience with that have come through and come back in their parents' near-death experience, or a loved one's near-death experience, or even a friend, they invariably look better. They look healthier, and they explain why, or they in some way let the parent or the friend or the loved one know that they're all right, don't worry about them, they're okay, that they're sorry that they caused all the pain that they did to other people, but it's something they had to go through. Sometimes we have suicide, people who attempt suicide who go through a near-death experience and then are shown the reasons why to stay and the reasons why being in a body is still worthwhile. But for those who take their life, invariably, the loved ones are shown later on, or in some way, I gain that knowledge that at some level they are now fine, they're now okay, don't worry about them, that they're going on. And I'm not demeaning or in any way making it less what you've gone through and the pain you've gone through and you know, all the things that you've seen. But I'm suggesting here that somehow, some way, in ways that we can't even understand, that individual, once they're gone, are healthy again. And they glow again, and they have a smile on their face again. And the whys of that, I can't really give you. What I can give you is that knowledge that they are somehow, some way healed, and they're okay. And that in that knowledge, you can lessen your worries and realize, you know, they're okay. And I don't have to keep grieving. Rather, I can look at them and forgive you, forgive them, forgive the situation, and I can let go of that. I can let go of that to, at least to a degree.
Where does reincarnation fit into this? If it
well,
does?
You know, you don't run across reincarnation that much in near-death experiences.
No.
I have, but you don't run across it that much. Where that comes into play is afterward. And after the near-death experience, invariably, many near-death experiencers begin to accept that theory of reincarnation and realize that they might have had other lives have other lives yet to come. I would put it at about maybe somewhere between 30-40% afterward begin
that's
to accept
high.
And believe in reincarnation.
Yeah, that's a pretty, I would say that's a very high figure. Let's
mm-hmm.
go next to Bing in Wilcox, Arizona. Bing, go ahead. Good to have you with us.
Pleasure to be aboard this wonderful program that you present, George,
welcome.
And
thank
with
you,
your guest.
Thank you.
I've had three out-of-body or near-death experiences. One was in the Hollywood area, Hollywood, California, and the other two were in the Arizona area.
Did you come away with that belief, or as PMH would say, being convinced that there is that God?
I would say the near God experience would have been in the Hollywood area when I was trying to break into the motion picture business.
Uh-huh.
Would I be permitted to say the hospital that it involved in the Hollywood area, or that'd be better
absolutely.
Off not to?
No, go ahead. I mean, if you were there, you were there.
Trying to break into the motion picture business, I was had a job at the Hollywood Presbyterian Hospital, and I was on my way to work, and I collapsed, so I made it back to the apartment that I was renting, and I could think, well, I better turn the water on all on cold and get in there to try and break the fever, the high fever that I thought I had. When I finally made it back to the Hollywood Presbyterian Hospital where I was working, they diagnosed me as having a strep throat incident, and I was later on turned loose in my job because I didn't make it for the 3 days that I was in the bathtub in the cold water, which immediately almost felt warm.
Did you think you died at that spot?
Yes, at that spot in the tub that I was sitting in, I had a piece of rebar in my backpack that kept floating to my throat area, and this deity or figure-like individual that I guess apparently crossed over to in my fever dreams kept waving it off, and he says, "And
hold on for a second. Let's hit the break, and we'll come back and finish." And, of course, our guest, PMH Atwater, and we're going to take your final calls with PMH in a moment. On our next Coast to Coast program, we'll be talking about just about everything. Ebola, black box voting, you name it, we'll have it on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, PMH Atwater, with us, your final calls as well. PMH, thank you again for being on the program. Really enjoying this event with you. Where do we get your latest book?
Oh, you can get it anywhere. Absolutely anywhere. Any bookstore can order it, Amazon.com, you know, absolutely anywhere. Dying to Know You, Proof of God and the Near-Death Experience. And I want to state here that the near-death phenomenon, and it is a phenomenon, it consists of both after effects and the experience. And very few people talk about the after effects. They're just as physical as they are psychological. People return with changes in brain structure, brain function, changes in the nervous system, the digestive system, skin sensitivity. You come back more sensitive to light and to sound, electrical sensitivity, most of them, a loss of the tolerance for pharmaceuticals, and that's a big one. That's a huge one for most people. You've got to help educate your doctors and your nurses to give you a lower dose of everything, the lowest possible dose. With children, this is a big deal, because a child is diagnosed according to age and weight. What if that child has had a near-death experience? So we're all invited here to re-educate our doctors. Most of us turn to homeopathy and vitamins and minerals and, you know, energy medicine, because that's the way we have to go afterward. So there's significant changes in your mind, in the way you talk, the way you live, even in the body that you wear. And people say that. It's the body that you wear, because they now identify with soul. But this little bitty book, my goodness, there's powerful things in that little book.
Good for you. Hey, let's go back to Bing in Wilcock, Arizona. So, Bing, you're in the tub. You think you've got a fever. What's happening to you? Are you dying at that point?
The cold water did feel warm. I was in there for two or three days, and then I was able to take the city bus back to where I worked at the hospital. They fixed me up, and then they said I was dismissed from that job. So I decided, well, I'm not meant to be here, so I'll pack up and make my way back to Arizona. And the deity that I guess had telepathy with was in a white robe, gold belt, gold around the cuffs, gold whatever around the bottom, but I was not able to tell whether it was a man, a woman, a supreme deity, and I guess we telepathically communicated. So I took that as a great life experience.
Did it tell you to come back to this side, or what?
It seemed to indicate that my duties, my life experiences here on planet Earth, were not yet fulfilled, and so I was able, like I said, after two or three days, able to make it back to the hospital where I worked, and they said, oh, it's a strep throat experience, and since you missed 3 days, it'd be better off for you to
move on.
to move on. Correct. Absolutely correct, George.
Oh, boy. That happened. Well, let me ask you this, PMH. These visitations by deities, whatever they may be, when these after-death experiences occur, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to convince you to go back to the human side of the life, or what?
Not necessarily. They often take on the role of a guide or a guardian or just a comforter. Just someone that's there to put you at ease before other things occur. Some kind of storyline or some kind of scenario or various elements. What we commonly have in near-death experiences are four main elements that happen to most people. The out-of-body experience is the most common. That happens globally to adults and children, but this out-of-body experience is very vivid. It's very detailed, many times with details that third parties are able to verify afterward. you know, they're able to check it. That light, I would call the second most common. There's something about that light. It knows your name. It knows all about you. You can converse with it. There's something very forgiving about this light. The third most common is a greeter of some kind, like what you're talking about. Someone is there, some kind of being. And that doesn't have to be the kind of beings that we're used to. Sometimes it's an animal. Sometimes it's a pet that had died and gone on before, or a relative, or a light being, or an angel, or a religious figure, you know, different kinds of greeters. The fourth most common is that life review. Now, notice that I didn't say anything about tunnels. In 1982, when Gallup poll did their first scientific survey of near-death experiences and near-death experiencers, only 9% of the people reported a tunnel. Still today, not that many people experience a tunnel. Yes, some do. Most do not. And in fact, in most places in the world, they've never even heard of tunnels. You can trace tunnel reports back to that time when the media sensationalized Raymond Moody's first book, Life After Life. I consider tunnels to be a media myth.
All right. Well, that media myth comes up a lot, though, doesn't it?
It comes up a lot because we expect it. We talk about it. Not that many people experience it, however. And there's another media myth occurring right now. In television, documentaries, they're looking for experiencers who had that phenomenon when they were in the hospital, where they were operated on, and that's the only kind of cases they're looking for are those cases that happen in regard to surgery or heart attack or something like that, when only about 12 to 28% of the cases occur like that. Most of them are not connected with surgery. So the public has this idea that the media or that near-death experiences only happen in regard to hospitals and surgery and their tunnels, and they don't look further. And when you look further, you find out that the near-death experience is far more dynamic than that. And, that there's far more going on in how it affects you and how it changes you than, what we're being told.
Next up, Claire's with us in Missouri. Claire, thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning to you both.
You too.
Most of what Ms. Atwater says is my experience as well. When I was given the choice of whether or not to come back, I was told to forget everything, but I negotiated. Apparently, I didn't negotiate for the right thing. Right now, I'm in a pickle where I am considering the possibility of consulting maybe a psychic or something, and I have an issue because I'm trying to reconcile what it says about not consulting soothsayers in the Bible, and I understand that Ms. Atwater does ruins and astrology,
mm-hmm.
And I was wondering,
sure does.
Is the Bible wrong? How do you reconcile that?
I don't try to reconcile it at all because I read from the Bible. I'm very respectful of any form of religious belief, very respectful of all of that. I pray and meditate every morning and often throughout the day. These other practices I do very seldom. I'm not a psychic on the stump giving demonstrations of my powers. That doesn't interest me at all. What interests me is how well I can live my life, how rich and how diverse and how greatly textured my life can be, the sensations and what I can do about that, and you know how that can affect me. So I'm not one who's turning to these other practices. Sometimes I do. Most of the time, I do not. I live my life according to that joy that is within me. And what I receive from prayer and meditation.
All right. Next up, we go to Kaylin in Spokane, Washington. Hi, Kaylin. Go ahead.
Hey, George. It's a pleasure to be on with you. I've been trying to contact you for, I think, 8 years now. But, anyways,
I'm glad you made it.
Just a subject of out-of-body experiences, I can relate to one of the gentlemen earlier who spoke of a stone structure that he would see or a monument. When I was like anywhere from 4 or 3 toddlers type age all the way till like the age of maybe 10, I used to have a dream almost every single night. Well, it would be any dream, but at the end of my dream, I would basically be out in this rainforest, right? I had no idea, I mean, what rainforests look like or the Yucatan or any of this stuff about pyramids, but I would basically rise up in the middle of the night out in this jungle, and I would see one of the Mayan-type pyramids, you know, the stone squares-type, you know, design. And there would be this, like, Easter Island-type statues, massive statue of faith, and it would chase me around for, like, 5 or 10 minutes. As long as I could evade it, I would sink through the ground. I would see my body laying in bed. Like, however I was laying there that morning when I woke up, and it would feel like a roller coaster, like the most intense feeling of just going down in a roller coaster. And I have no idea still to this day what any of it means, but I know I definitely have some kind of a Mazatec connection, it feels like.
What do you think of that, PMH?
Well, most children have out-of-body experiences. That's normal. There's nothing wrong with flights of fancy or even flights that are very real, that aren't fancy at all, that have nothing to do with dreams, but are very real and vivid. And again, that's normal for children. It's also normal, I believe, for people of any age to go into one of these episodes and have it either shake them up, wake them up, or tease them in the sense of maybe I've lived before, this is a bleed through of some kind, or isn't this interesting that something like this that I could know about. So I would say to you, my friend, that I bless you for having something like this happening in your life. This is helping you to realize there's more to life.
Much more to life. There's no question about it. I think the belief, you don't like that word, in the other side makes you live your personal life much better, don't you?
Absolutely. And I would add to that this wonderful little scientific factoid and the fact that that we're only aware of between 8 to 10% of the electromagnetic spectrum. Anything else is either infra or ultra to our faculties of perception. These experiences they're called waking experiences, where we kind of wake up to more of life than seems to be. What that's doing is dissolving more and more of that curtain that seems to separate us, or at least expanding and accelerating our faculties. I'm sure this happens in near-death states. That's part of the after effects, where our faculties expand and enhance. So we're able to take in more of what's there. All of this stuff is there. We didn't invent it. It wasn't kind of a dream or hallucination. It's all there. And even prayer and meditation begins to expand your faculties. So you're able to take in more of what's there. And yes, you live your life better. Yes, your life becomes richer and more textured, because you realize that everything is alive. There's nothing that isn't alive.
And that's the wonders of all of this, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. PMH, thank you for being on the program. We're out of time, but keep in touch with us.
Well, listen, I'll see you in February.
You got it. Oh, that's right. Conscious Life, huh?
Yes, and I'm going to be on your panel. We'll finally get to see each other.
Good. I'm looking forward to that.
Me too.
All right. You take care of yourself. PMH at Water. And if you need to email me, I'm always available to you at george@coasttocoastam.com. And don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us, of course, on Twitter. For David Pujinski, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.